and exhale, but not quite yet, because the regular season has not yet concluded. That's right. This episode will feature a preview of game 161 and 162, that doubleheader on Monday morning between the New York Mets and the Atlanta Braves, and a preview of the AL wild card round. Buckle up. It's Baseball Barbacast. Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world that knows that MLB got what it deserved with the even more expanded playoffs. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman. And if you think about Mets Braves doubleheader as bonus playoffs, it makes it slightly more fun.
Yes. The play-in for the play-in for the play-in, as we will have more regular season baseball on Monday afternoon. We are recording this on Sunday evening. In fact, the Yankees and Pirates are still playing, but we don't care about them. They don't matter. We are going to focus in this episode talking about the Mets and Braves, who have two more baseball games to play on Monday. And then we are going to preview the thankfully settled American League wildcard series, which did have a late switch today. And we will get into that last minute swerve that Detroit ended up taking from Baltimore to Houston. But Jake, let's begin with the chaos that we all kind of saw. I think it was pretty early last week. We were like, hey, so are we going to play some games on Monday? And now we have arrived. When we woke up on Sunday morning, Jake, there was still an escape from this. There was a path forward where we could have made it to the wild card round without having to play these last two games in Atlanta. But that is not the path that we ended up going down. We would have needed the Mets to win and the D-backs to lose today, and that is not what happened. So let's recap how what went down in game 162. Let's be honest. This is not a normal weekend recap. There will be teams we would do not even acknowledge in this episode. We are in October mode. And so, sorry, we're not going to talk about everybody. We're going to focus on the games that actually impacted what is to come in October.
Very briefly, I did a radio hit this weekend for Sportsnet in Canada as part of the Blue Jays pregame show. And, you know, the guy welcomed me on and goes, and then later on, we'll preview the Blue Jays and Marlins. And I was like, whoa, like, I did not know they were playing, but best of luck to everyone involved. Yes. Okay. So here's what happened on Sunday. All right. On Sunday morning, the Atlanta Braves were technically one game up on the New York Mets and the Arizona Diamondbacks. A Braves victory over the Kansas City Royals on Sunday would have guaranteed Atlanta a postseason spot. Okay. Or an Arizona loss also would have guaranteed them a spot, but don't think about that. It's too complicated. That is not what happened. The Royals beat the Braves 4-2. Charlie Morton allowed three runs within the first three batters of the game on a three-run dinger by Michael Massey. The Royals held on late. They won 4-2. Okay. With that Braves loss, if the Mets had won and the Diamondbacks had lost, we would have had no game on Monday. And the Mets did win. David Peterson, masterclass, shutting out the Brewers. The Mets win 5-0, couple RBI singles from them. Francisco Lindor goes yard. He is back. He is DHing. He does not look comfortable, but he is still playing well. However,
comfortable enough to homer. Now we should also say, like, great, good, David Peterson. Like, the reason we were even in this situation to begin with is because the Mets had lost on Friday and Saturday to a Brewers team that was not playing for anything. Now, the Brewers lineup was even more lackluster on Sunday, but the Mets did do what they needed to do, which turned our attention to the desert.
And in the desert, the Arizona Diamondbacks were in danger of seriously fumbling the nuclear football. They lost on Friday to a San Diego team not playing for anything. They lost on Saturday to a San Diego team not playing for anything. I believe they were no hit through six innings on a spot start from Padre starter Randy Vasquez, who's not going to make their wild card roster. Like, woof.
Yeah, they look terrible. And this D-backs offense, which, as we found out this afternoon, has been the best offense in baseball from a run production standpoint for most of the season. I think runs per game, they are number one in the season, but it was like this amazing offense went silent at the worst possible time. The D-backs or the Padres hit a bunch of ninth inning homers. Again, it's like Brandon Lockridge and Higashioka, and the D-backs are like, and we're looking around on Saturday night like, oh my God, like the Diamondbacks, this is the thing, just quickly on Arizona. We didn't have time to even process the idea that Arizona could like fumble this in this way. Like it wasn't like Minnesota or Seattle, these other teams that just like slowly like, oh no, this like slow motion car crash. Arizona, you were suddenly waking up on Sunday like, oh my gosh, are they actually going to choke this? But no, that is not what happened on Sunday.
They go down early. They do go down early. They go down 1-0 and everyone's eyes go wide. Are we going to play Monday? And then the Arizona Diamondbacks said, watch this. And they put up six like, runs in the fourth inning. Yeah, we crush it. Put up six runs, I believe, in the fourth inning. The big blow was a Ketel Marte monster shot, like upper deck, deep to left. Arizona breaks it open. They win 11-2 over San Diego. Arizona win, New York win, Atlanta loss. And that leaves us with the following situation. All three teams technically tied. Okay. Technically tied. And so the New York Mets are probably currently in the air or on a plane from Milwaukee to Atlanta to play a doubleheader tomorrow at Truist Park against the Braves. Now, why do we have to play this doubleheader? The Mets and Braves had a three-game set scheduled for this past week. Hurricane Tropical Storm Helene washed out games 2 and 3 of that series. They were then moved to a doubleheader. MLB could have forced them to play somewhere else. They opted not to. I think the problem here has more to do with the lack of a break between the regular season and the playoffs. There's no cushion. And here we are. We are left with one of the more wonky, bizarre baseball things that I can remember in recent memory. Now, why is it so weird? If one team sweeps tomorrow, they are in. The team that gets swept is out. And the Arizona Diamondbacks, watching from home, are in the playoff field. However, if the Mets and Braves split tomorrow, they will both be in the playoffs. And Arizona will be left on the outside looking in.
And that has presented a very strange set of motivations and incentives, which have led to some very interesting pitching choices going into this doubleheader. Because the fact of the matter is, whoever wins a game tomorrow, whoever wins the first game tomorrow, will have a spot in the postseason. So that is a fact. All right, let's just start there. And so if you knew that fact, you would think, well, wow, what an opportunity. You can clinch a postseason spot if you, you know, win this game. Shouldn't you pitch your best starter? No, that is not what is happening because of the scenario that Jake has laid out, where if you lose the first game, the team you just lost to is chilling. And thus that second game will not need to be won. And thus will not need to start the pitcher that they actually will be wanting to start and in theory then save for the start of the wild card round on Tuesday.
I'm going to just reword some of it. Specifically, the Braves. Let's say the Braves win game one. Okay? They got Spencer Schwellenbach, who's very good. He's starting game one. They win. They have Chris Sale in the pocket. They're not going to throw him in game two. They're going to just find as whoever the least important pitchers are that can suck up innings are going to throw the innings in game two. And I would imagine a number of important Braves will not play in game two. Like Ozzie Albies is not playing in game two if they win game one, right? And therefore, the road for the Mets is very easy in game two. Not only are the Braves not trying, they are incentivized to lose as quickly as possible so that they can get on a plane for their game the following day. Now, this is something that we
no
less. San Diego. This is something that we see, frankly, often in getaway days. Like if a team is playing on a Sunday afternoon, swing rates go up. Like, guys are more aggressive knowing that, like, they need to get the game over with quicker. That is a thing. Okay. You talk to any former player, guys are swinging on getaway days. And so this is that times a thousand. Not like the winning team of game one is going to go out there in game two and just throw it. And like, but it will change behavioral choices. Yeah. And it already has based upon the pitching matchups.
Because as you mentioned, for the Braves, they had already sort of telegraphed that we will only save Chris Sale, you know, for an absolute must win. In which case, if they lose the first game, right? But the Mets apparently, reportedly, have made something of a similar decision, which is to start Tyler McGill in game one and save Luis Severino to either pitch a game in game two against the Braves team that, in theory, won't be trying very hard. Or if you win that first game, you have Luis Severino going in game one on Tuesday, in all likelihood in San Diego, right? Because in that scenario,
Jordan, you're confusing yourself. You're confusing yourself.
I don't feel bad about confusing myself. The point is they would be then starting Luis Severino if they win that first game on Tuesday somewhere.
One of us just wrote a thousand words about this and had to reconcile with it all day, and the other one did it, and that's okay. Now, I feel two ways about this entire thing. I feel somewhat gleeful about such a bizarre, topsy-turvy, wonky thing. We will remember this forever, and the games tomorrow will be must-see television, okay, no matter how they turn out. On the other hand, teams are not incentivized to win the game that is in front of them. In fact, it is the opposite. Game two will be a weird spectacle, and the Arizona Diamondbacks will have to watch it from home, hoping that one of the two NL East teams, out of sheer spite, wins both of those games. And you feel a little bit more icky about this than I do, I think. Do you want to maybe unpack a little bit?
I'm not mad at anyone. Like, I don't really know what the best... I mean, the way to handle this is just a much bigger conversation that doesn't have to do with the specifics of this scenario. It has to do with the schedule. It has to do with the tiebreakers. It has to do with all these things, right? The fact that we have arrived at this situation where this first game is a ticket to the postseason and yet we're not seeing Chris Sale or Luis Severino is just a strange outcome. I understand it. I'm not mad at the teams. It's just a strange outcome. And the fact that that second game is going to be so odd and that Arizona is going to be left watching, rooting for these teams one way or the other is just really, it's just a very odd way to end up here, to finish out the regular season. So it's really not that much more complicated than that. And you said, oh, well, they're going to have to hope that one of these teams wins out of spite. Well, I mean, these are division rivals. Like, in theory, the Braves would enjoy more sending the Mets home than indirectly sending the D-backs home. You know, so in that sense, that there is something there to play for. And like we said, we know whoever's playing in game two is going to be trying to win and might still win. A sweep is possible tomorrow. It's baseball. Whoever's throwing it, like, that is true. But as you said, the fact of the matter is the incentives will not be there for one of the teams to be putting their best team on the field. And that is strange.
That leaves us with this, and then we'll move on. The floor here is low. The ceiling is high. The floor is Atlanta dominates in game one with Schwellenbach. He's great. Mets can't figure him out. He dominated them last week. Mets come back in game two with Severino. He's awesome. They both get it, right? That's the floor where it's like we go to sleep tomorrow night saying, neither of the games are that close, right?
Yep.
It just all kind of feels, sorry, Arizona. The ceiling, though, is hilarious. Where, let's say Atlanta wins game one, Severino in game two against, like, me and you.
Eli White batting cleanup.
They just roll out the B team. And the B team Braves, not given a rat's ass, beat the Mets, who are playing for their postseason lives. Or vice versa. That outcome is so funny and so compelling and so unique that I am hoping that someone sweeps. I have decided. Yeah. Like that, I think, is what I want from an entertainment
perspective. I think I agree. And it's worth noting that a Mets sweep would then send the Mets to San Diego in a way that if they win that first game, if they would rather fly to Milwaukee, they really better lose that second game. but either way, I agree with you. I think that that is what I am kind of rooting for, but I don't know. Yeah. Hopefully that first game, which again is a ticket to the postseason, is compelling regardless of the pitching matches, regardless of whether it's Severino Sale or not. I do think that, like, I am very excited to watch this first game because it is a massively important game. So the pressure will still be on the team to deliver against another team that isn't trying as hard. Like, that is so, in that sense, the pressure will very much be on.
You're so right about the following sentence. Okay. Win and you're in. Use your second best available pitcher. Right. Like, that is a fact and it's freaking odd. We already had one situation today, which was the Padres, okay? If the Padres beat the Diamondbacks, there would be no game, no doubleheader, okay? It was in the Padres' best interest to lose to Arizona to force the Braves-Mets doubleheader in the likelihood that they face one of those two teams. They will face either the Braves or the Mets. They cannot face the Diamondbacks.
Right.
So that those teams have to play all those games in a row. So like the Padres went out there today and like, I assume they tried their best, but like it was definitely in their best interest to lose. Yeah. And that type of scenario happens sometimes in sports. This is not singular, but this is really the most blatant version of that we've had in baseball in 100%. Recent memory. Right?
Yes. Last thing on this, and then we'll say like spend 2 minutes on the rest of game 162s and then we'll take a break. The two things that I am interested in, just the outcomes of this, and obviously we're going to record on Monday night after this and we'll preview the National League and all that stuff. So maybe we will get more details about how all of this has unfolded. But the other interesting element that we have to mention, one is, how is Arizona consuming this game?
Where are they watching?
Are they at the airport? Are they just going to fly to Milwaukee and hope for the best? Are they like, I'm just fascinated about the reporting about how they're going to do that. So that's one thing. And then related to that is the fact that whoever wins tomorrow, whoever gets in, there ain't no time to pop bottles.
Right? No.
Because, I mean, like, whoever wins game one, you're in the postseason. Normally, you win game one, you win a game, and you're in the postseason. What are you doing after the game? That's incredible, right? Actually, you have to play another game even if you don't care. Although
and
that's
play tomorrow.
But that's an even funnier concept.
Do you celebrate?
Team wins game one. Goes ham in between doubleheaders.
I mean, then, there's a 40-minute gap between doubleheaders.
No, I know. This is patently ridiculous. I'm just
the
saying.
The funniest thing is, it's this, like, okay, so let's say like the Mets win game one. Tyler McGill could just get hammered. Like, he's not going to be on the playoff roster the next round.
That's a good point. It's really just him. But anyway, the point is like, whoever wins tomorrow, whether the D-backs get in late, I guess they could, you know, have some calm champagne on the plane, but you better be getting ready to play the Brewers. Like, you can't go hard tomorrow night. So that is another thing. We have been robbed of multiple champagne celebration images. That has been taken from us. So
if I'm the Diamondbacks, the internet is telling me that their official airline sponsor is American Airlines. They should rent out the American Airlines lounge at Sky Harbor. Okay.
Yeah.
Family, friends, everyone in there for the D-backs. You're so flying out of Sky Harbor.
What a sad place to end your season, though.
Oh,
like Sky Harbor's, the thing. No, yes. I know. It's fine. But you know what I mean? Like, I don't. It's just, I just am fascinated to hear how
this is like, Jordan, when I was in college and the D3 baseball version of March Madness was revealed at midnight on a Sunday into a Monday. And we would throw a party every year and our coach would just like call us at 12:04 and tell us if our season was over or we had to play on Wednesday. And like, oh, hey, seniors, you're never playing baseball again.
Right.
Sorry that you're 12 beers deep.
But again, that's play on Wednesday. Not play the next
not play on the next day.
The next day. Anyway, right, let's, so that's just
so good. Anyway. So good. So good. All right, let's throw this into turbo mode.
Yeah.
Final day. Just one or two things I want to point out.
Let's get to the
Royals side and the Tigers after when we previewed AL, because that is how we ended up with those matchups. So we'll get to that after. But other things, anything else that caught your attention in game 162? I mean, Charlie Blackman, that was cool. We love Charlie Blackman. He played center field for the first time in 6 years. Got a hit, got pinch ran for. I'm sure for Rockies fans who haven't had a lot to cheer for, that will be a very memorable moment. So that's very cool.
Luis Arraez, 3 straight batting titles with 3 teams. Otani got hot enough this weekend that we were like, triple crown, triple crown, triple crown. No triple crown. That's okay. That's fine. He's still really good.
Yes, but we did get triple crowns on the mound as Tarek Skubal has clinched a triple crown in the American League for pitchers, as he has led the AL in wins, ERA, and strikeouts, which is pretty good way to lead into your game one start in the wild card series. And Chris Sale also might clinch the National League triple crown on Monday. We will see what happens with there. Other milestones we did not get. Jose Ramirez did not get to 40-40. He got his 39th home run on Saturday night. I was there for that. But the Astros and Guardians game was the one game that did not happen on Sunday, unfortunately, because of the crappy weather here in Northeast Ohio. So that did not happen. That was unfortunate for Jose Ramirez. I'm sure he is happy to go relax for 5 days as he waits for their opponent in the ALDS. Mariner swept the A's. Too late. It's too bad. Logan Gilbert and Kyle Raleigh are amazing. But yep, that obviously too late for them. O'Neill Cruz met Paul O'Neill. That was very cool. That's the person he is named after. And that's the first time he had met him in person. So those images were very, very cool. And the Twins going out, ultimate, mega sad, getting swept at home by Baltimore. But little nugget of news there is that both Derek Falvey, the GM, and Rocco Baldelli will be back in 2025. So any wondering about, oh, Twins, what a catastrophic collapse. Will they fire people? No, they will not. So I just wanted to make sure we mention that before we take a break.
When we get back, it is playoff preview time. Oh my gosh. Oh my goodness. Sold out stadiums and high stakes baseball is just 2 days away. And we are going to tell you all about the American League after this. All right, welcome back. Baseball Barbercast, AL playoff preview, wildcard round, and our matchups flipped on the final day of the season. We woke up on Sunday. It was the, if the season ended today, which is hilarious when the season ends today, right? If the season ended this morning, it would be Houston against Kansas City and Baltimore against Detroit. But on the final day of the year, the Royals pulled out that 4-2 win over the really trying to win Braves. And the Tigers, with really not too much to play for, got blasted by the Chicago White Sox, Jordan, who, while they did finish with the most losses of all time, they did not finish with the worst winning percentage in MLB modern history. They did win 6 of their last 12 to skirt. So you can legitimately say they are not the worst team of all time. Like, I could tell you that someone else was the worst team of all time and have an argument behind that.
Yeah. Feel pretty good. This was the worst team of all time. Anyway, now you mentioned the Tigers weren't really playing for anything. They were playing for this, and which was to not play the Astros. Now, who knows? We can't speak to whether the Tigers, whether would have preferred to play Houston or would have preferred to play Baltimore. But the point is that was an opportunity there for them, and an opportunity there for them because they were playing the worst team of all time. And so we all just kind of penciled in the Tigers beating the White Sox no matter what pitchers they threw out there. And AJ Hinch had some quotes after the game being like, we were going to throw Maeda, Mize, and Montero like literally no matter what. Like there was no, we were not going to treat this game as if it was a must win to try and do anything. And I believe him, right? But at the same time, a lot of us assumed they were going to win the series against the White Sox and they didn't. And so that is why we did have this late change, which now sets up a matchup that a couple, like a week or 10 days ago, when we started to realize like, oh my God, the Tigers might make the postseason. The Tigers being the 6 is how we were talking about it. And then over the last few days, it was like, wait a minute, Tigers are going to be the 5. And now at the last minute, we end up back with the matchup that we really wanted to see. And that is the one we are going to start with. Houston Astros hosting AJ Hinch, former manager, and the Detroit Tigers.
Chugga, 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 chugga. Do you hear that sound, George? Chugga, chugga.
Yeah.
That's me booting up the narrative machine. Okay.
The narrative machine or the narrative train?
I was kind of narrative.
Yeah, I guess
chugga, the chugga.
I was thinking about like an old like Industrial Revolution Manchester, mm-hmm. England factory, sure. plant with like a big wheel.
Okay,
is kind of what I was thinking with like a smokestack.
I'm following. I'm visualizing.
What sound is maybe like beep boop ba ba boop boop beep beep.
Again, train, we can let us know, what did that sound like? Were you, did you feel let like us, you were
email us baseballbarbecues@gmail.com. what sound does a quote machine make?
Does the narrative machine make
the motif apparatus, the thematic device has been activated, because AJ Hinch returning to Minute Maid Park, where he made his name as the skipper of the Houston Astros from 2015 to 2019, before he was wrapped up in the can-banging scandal. But even though they were hitting garbage, the stink could not attach to Hinch. And he was hired as the manager of the Detroit Tigers before the 2021 season. And here he is with those Tigers in his old stomping grounds.
Yes. Well, and let's be... after he was banned from baseball for a year.
Suspended.
Suspended. Okay, sure. But the point is, it's now, wrapped, like he was suspended and that ended. And the Tigers were like, oh, yeah, we still think you're a pretty damn good manager. And it turns out they may have been exactly correct.
Seems right.
Here are the Tigers in the postseason in A.J. Hinch's fourth season at the helm. And Hinch versus Houston stands out on its own for sure. For all the obvious reasons, right? However, I also think that this is a really special level of Hinch, who, of course, was, you know, the manager for the Astros as they were ascending into this postseason powerhouse, facing, now leading a team that has not been to October since the year before Hinch was hired in Houston. Okay, it's been 10 years since the Tigers were in October, and they're facing the team that has been to the ALCS 7 straight years. That is, I mean, that's just perfect. That's regardless of who's involved, that is really it. And so you have these kids on this Tigers roster who don't know any better. A fraction of these players, I think it's like one or two, maybe virtually, like there's so few of them that have ever played in October facing a Houston team that has played, I mean, so many games at this time of the year over the past decade.
And to be clear, there are not too many Astros left from the 2019 team. It is fewer than you might realize. Kyle Tucker
from 2019, Jordan Alvarez, from Hinch. Sure, that's true.
Yeah. Brian Abreu is still there. Obviously, Bregman and Altuve and Justin Verlander are the big ones. Besides that, there really is not a whole lot left. Still, I believe it has a lot of juice. Justin Verlander versus the Tigers is great, even though he's unlikely to pitch. Hunter Brown, the Astros number two starter, who is from Detroit and grew up a diehard Justin Verlander fan. That is very fun. There's a lot to like here. Let's begin by comparing the offenses. Mm-hmm. Not really a contest.
Yeah. Houston is not as terrifying as they have been in the past. That is a product of a couple things. The first is that Jordan Alvarez is injured and a TBD for this series. I wish we knew whether he would definitely be playing or not, but either he will be playing in a somewhat compromised situation or he will be not playing. And that's a big deal because he is their best hitter. He is still, I believe, one of the three or four best hitters on earth and certainly who you want in your lineup at this time of year. And so Jordan not playing is a massive deal that I wish I knew whether he was or not. However, beyond that, the Astros still have a ton of very good hitters who have had very good seasons. That's Bregman. That's Altuve. That's their catcher, one of the best hitting catchers in baseball, Yainer Diaz, who's more of a new character for them, right? Kyle Tucker, who's now been back for a few weeks and looks great. However, there's just, if you look a little bit deeper, like Bregman has walking the least that he ever has. Altuve's chasing a lot. There's parts of this lineup. Diaz never walks either. Like there is they feel more pitchable than ever. Now, Jordan is Jordan. He is not particularly pitchable, even if he can barely walk.
No.
However, while this is still, they still have way more good hitters than the Tigers. There's at least like, they're not as both by the numbers and by just when you watch them, they don't feel as horrifying as they normally are. However, when you compare them to the Tigers, again, this unbelievable September run,
This is still an offense which has been better in September, but still ranks, I believe, 18th in WRC+. And on the season is like bottom five in OBP. And their three best hitters are all lefties, right? Parker Meadows, Riley Green, and Kerry Carpenter, who destroys right-handers and is sort of a non-factor against lefties. Green is awesome all the time. But beyond that, it's a lot of really young guys who we just haven't really seen play very much Major League Baseball. And so maybe that's a good thing. And maybe they all show up and they all, you know, go 1 for 25.
But where the Tigers close the gap is on the bump. For most of these previews, we're going to separate starting pitching and the bullpen. Can't really do that with the Tigers because of how they go about their pitching. The predicted possible starting pitching matchups are as follows. I believe game one is set. That'll be Framber Valdez against Tarik Skubal. That is a delicious, delicious first course. One of the most experienced postseason starters we have in baseball in Framber against the AL Cy Young in waiting, Tarik Skubal, making his first career postseason start. Game two looks like it's going to be Hunter Brown for the Astros, the Detroit kid, against, we will see. Game three, Yusei Kikuchi, left-hander for the Astros against, we're going to find out at some point before the game, you'd think. And that is because the Tigers have just been mixing and matching their arms in a very non-traditional fashion for a lot of the month. The only guys that give real starts to besides Skubal.
Since they traded Flaherty, right? I mean,
yeah. The guys that give, they give Reese Olson starts, right? But he has not been back healthy for too long. They give Keeter Montero starts, but he pitched today, and I don't think we'll get a start. I would assume that one of the two games in this series would be an opener to a gentleman named Brant Herter, who will be the bulk boy. All right. I'm going to ask this question. Who has the better pitching, the Astros or the Tigers? We obviously think that the Astros starters, given their depth, are probably better. But as a whole, if you could have all of the pitchers on either of these teams on your postseason roster, who do you want?
I mean, again, if you just look at the numbers, just full ERA for the whole season and just across the board, you could add up all the F war and the whip and the ERA, the Tigers rank better. Now, some of that is, of course, how horrible the Astros were on the mound for the first couple months, right? We should not forget about that, okay? And so, whereas over the last couple months, we know Detroit has had this amazing run with all these bullpen games, but the Astros rotation has really rounded into form. And so I still have to give the edge slightly to Houston because it's not going to be as much of a button mashing extravaganza with AJ Hinch managing. But at the same time, that is what has worked for Detroit for the last month plus. So I'm not saying that that strategy cannot work, but I still lean Houston slightly because at the end of the day, they do still also have Josh Hader and Brian Abreu, who are two of the best relievers on earth. And Brian Presley is a good reliever. And I just think that I feel I know what the plan is for more of the Astros innings with good pitchers in a way that still leads the edge there, but it is close.
I think I would take Detroit. I think I would take Detroit for this very simple reason. It's not like they have a regular frontline guy starting game one as their one real starter, right? It's not as if it's, no disrespect, I'm just trying to pull a starter out of my butt. You know, like Logan Gilbert, okay?
Who That's had a really terrible, terrible, terrible example. Logan Gilbert will be a...
but he's not the Cy Young. That is my point. Like, he's Corbin Burns.
Fourth.
Corbin Burns is maybe even a better example, right? Like, Skubal has been the best pitcher on the planet this year in the American League. And for that reason, I think I just... He could just win that game.
Well, he's got to
dominate that guy.
It's that, and it's a three-game series. So that's why I think you can make the case for Detroit, is while what I just said, I don't know what the plan is for a lot of these innings after Skubal, I do know that they don't have to actually cover that many. Whereas while I do think you are probably disrespecting how good Brown and Kikuchi have been over the last month and a half, I do think that, yeah, if Scooble can just win game one, that's really the question that we're having, is can they just bullpen their way to a second victory over those next two games? And it's very possible they can.
Detroit's top four relievers, Brisky, Holton, Foley, and Will Vest, are like all really good. Like they all have ERAs like under 2.3 in September, mm-hmm. too. Like they're all hot right now. Jackson Jobe is a big, keep an eye on that guy. We talked about him last episode. Throwing 100 out of the pen. Could he be a factor? We shall see. And for Houston, it's like, I'm not really sure who you trust behind Abreu, Hader, and Presley. It's just a much less reliable situation for them. I asked my cousin Rob, by the way, who's a big Tigers fan, about who he trusts in the bullpen. He literally said anybody but Kenta Maeda.
Well, you probably won't have to worry about that. But yeah, I think that's fair. That's why it's just going to be really important for the Astros starters to give good 5 or 6 or 7 innings so that you don't have to call on Hector Neris in a huge spot. And I know Brian King is a total anonymous dude, has been good for them. Caleb Ort's been good for them. Like they have some other guys. And again, like I agree about definitely Holden and Foley. Some of these other guys. But again, like we said, we've never seen any. Who am I to say that I trust anybody in any sort of relief situation? And by the way, I think that Josh Hader is a fascinating character here, right? I mean, he is a new Astro. And every year we add a couple different new people into the Astros mix. And he has to be one of the most important ones as we begin this postseason run. And that's the other thing as we just think about Houston here, is this is only the second time during this run that they've had to play in this first round. The other round was in 2020, when we, of course, that team was like at 500, below 500, and then they ended up...
They did not win the division.
They did not, right. They were just bad over that shortened season, and they still managed to get to the CS. But other than that, they have been... You know, express lane to the DS and in all of these other runs. So them having to go out there and play on Tuesday is a little bit new. But that's kind of the way I'm thinking about those things.
Jordan, these teams played each other 6 times during the regular season. How did that go?
So Houston won both series 2-1. They first played in Detroit in May, and Fromber beat Casey Mize, who was then still starting. Scooble beat Christian Javier. Remember him?
I do.
Remember, the Astros are missing a lot of guys. I know a lot of other staffs are too, and the fact that the Astros still have a good staff, but like, remember, all these guys we've seen pitching in October for Houston recently, Urquidy, Javier, Garcia, McCullers, Verlander, like, there's a chance... There's a chance none of those guys throw a pitch like that. That's a really wild part about this Houston staff. So anyway, Scooble beat Javier, and then Verlander, in what was his best start of the year, beat Jack Flaherty in that third game. Then in Houston in June, Hunter Brown beat Scooble. Brown was amazing. Scooble was fine. Jack Flaherty again pitched. He beat Spencer Arrighetti. Arrighetti got crushed. And then Ronel Blanco, who was not expected to pitch in this series, he no-hit the Tigers for 7 innings, beating Kenta Maeda. So the big takeaway here is that Scooble has faced the Astros twice, and he beat them once, and he was pretty good against them in the second time, but it will not necessarily be a first look for Houston in this game.
Couple of X factors as we zoom in. The obvious one is Yordan Alvarez's health. He has 35 home runs and a 959 OPS. Whether or not he can play... That'll swing a 3-game set.
Yeah. Just to be clear, he injured his knee just on like a very regular slide. So it is a knee sort of contusion that is dealing with him. So
he has not played since September 22nd. He did a workout on Sunday today. He is scheduled to take batting practice on Monday tomorrow at the workout that they'll have at Minute Maid Park. I am skeptical that he will be completely healthy. I think you have to put him on the roster.
I mean, probably, yeah.
Right?
I mean, I guess if he can't walk, then probably not. But I don't know. We will see there. But that is obviously a very, very important one.
So for Detroit, Cary Carpenter is the X factor here for me because of how he is deployed. Against right-handed pitching, he's an MVP candidate level hitter. Okay. Like, I know that sounds wild. I can't remember if I read this out on the pod, But I think the only people better than him against right-handed pitching, Judge, Otani, Soto, Bobby Witt Jr.
And that's...
with 250 plate appearances. That's it. Again, remember, Judge, Otani, Soto, Bobby Witt Jr., Carey freaking Carpenter against righties. Against lefties, he just doesn't do that. He's just like,
he basically hasn't played. He has 32 plate appearances against left-handed pitching this year. I know he missed time with injury too, but he hit 107, right? Three hits against left-handers this season, and he will... I mean, like, is he going to be in the lineup against Schwarber and Kikuchi?
No.
I think you probably not, right? And so that's this thing is, so, but he's still an X factor for you, even if he doesn't
absolutely.
Play.
Absolutely. Absolutely, because he, in two of these three games, the Tigers' best hitter, Carey Carpenter against righties, will not start the game, but will certainly be deployed, okay? And whether that is, it'll probably be against Presley or Brian Abreu if the Tigers are down. And what Carpenter does in that at bat is like potentially the whole game. Right. Like he's so good, so good against right-handed pitching. Yeah. And then in the game that Hunter Brown starts, like you might just go like 2-for-4 with a bomb, right?
He's just better, right?
And I think it's such a unique thing that we have here because, you know, we have platoon guys all the time. But rarely is it this obvious and that player such a key part of the offense.
Yes.
In this
that
way.
Second part is definitely true.
And when AJ Hinch chooses to press the Carey Carpenter break in case of emergency pinch hit appearance is going to just be so interesting to me. So that is just like an enormous thing to keep an eye on.
Yeah. And it's that plus what I said before, which is that, you know, Parker Meadows and Riley Green are arguably their two other players. Now, I expect them to be in the lineup for all those games, right? But still, I mean, that is the thing that the Astros really have here in terms of matchup-wise, and also elevates the importance for a Torkelson, for a Matt Vierling, who has generally hit lefties very well.
For Andy Ibañez, anonymous Tigers who hit lefties. So that's just, I'm fascinated by that, dude. I just want to remind everybody.
And,
just one more. OPS. Against right-handed pitching this year, okay? Judge, MVP. Otani, MVP. Bobby Witt Jr., second place, MVP probably. Juan Soto, third place. Carey Carpenter, okay? Carey freaking Carpenter. He rakes. All right, Jordan. Let's ask the important question.
Except for when he can't, because there's a guy throwing with his left hand.
Don't worry about that. Let's ask the important question, okay? Yeah. Who throws the first pitches, the ceremonial first pitches that gets the crowd fired up? One of my favorite things about playoff baseball. Who you got?
I mean, this would be a way more interesting conversation in Detroit. And if they advance, I will, in all likelihood, be there in the DS in Detroit. So I'm excited to see. I mean, Houston's had 5 billion postseason games. So, I mean, I don't know how many guys have done multiple of these. Like, there's, Bagwell, Biggio. I mean, how many guys do you want to bring out here? So I don't even really.
Okay, a couple options. Yeah. You got to open your brain. One, Dusty Baker. Bring him back.
That's an interesting one. Would you do it now?
I don't know.
That's kind of insulting to have him do it for the wild card series.
I know, but hilarious. Dusty Baker, another option. Justin Verlander, if he's not on the wild card roster.
That's even less likely.
We had Reese Hoskins throw out the first pitch in a Phillies wild card game last year. You know, I'm just saying. Another option, Martin Maldonado. Right? Astros legend. I don't know what he's up to.
Well, he should catch the first pitch.
Yes. Or pitch the first catch. And then the other one that came to mind for me was Javi Baez. I don't know where he is.
Was he in? I didn't see him in like the champagne celebration.
Don't know. Don't know where he is. So just there you go. Boy. All right. Now the really important question. Yeah. Who you got?
I'm sticking with Houston here. Again, I've said this before already. Like, I just don't really believe in anything except for Houston being in the ALCS, and I'm still debating whether I'm going to pick them against Cleveland, and that we should mention the winner of this will face Cleveland starting on Saturday. I will be there. They will face Tanner Bibee on game one, but I'm taking Houston, and sorry, am I a party pooper? I guess, but
so I'm going to
we'll figure it out.
I told you I was going to pick Detroit, but I'm going to pick Houston. And here's why.
But the Tigers fans listening can know that you were thinking about picking the Tigers. So that's
like seriously was. Here's why. Yeah. I'm going to say the following sentence. You tell me how silly it sounds. Yeah, I think the Houston Astros are going to get bounced in the first round of the playoffs. by the Think Tigers. About how silly that sounds. No, not even the Tigers. Like, take the Tigers out of it.
Okay.
The Astros losing in the first round, based upon what my eyes have seen, feels inconceivably impossible.
I literally haven't seen it.
Literally have not seen it. And therefore, I will pick them until they burn me. Right? Like, at this point. I'm sorry. Like, I think the Tigers are fun and they're great. And I think Scuba will win game one. I think he's going to show up and dominate. But I think Astros backs against the wall. They will not panic. They will not get tight. I understand the Tigers have gotten hot. It's a really young team. We'll see. It would be awesome if they could do it. But I, like, why am I, why would anyone pick against the Houston Astros now in the playoffs? I don't know. No reason.
Yeah. Even in 2015, they, you know, won that wild card game against the Yankees before losing in the DS.
Dude, we've seen this movie 7 times.
I know.
7 times.
Trust me, when we get to the NL preview, I will have zero conviction on anything. And this, where I'm saying the Tigers have a chance, is the most confident I feel about anything, is that the Astros will not lose this first round.
You know what else I feel confident about? That we're going to be right back after we take this break to preview the other side, Orioles Royals. And welcome back to Baseball Barbercast. Jake Mintz, Jordan Schusterman. We got news.
This is not insignificant. I don't know how important it is. It impacts us in the way we do our jobs more than it impacts the fans watching at home. But we have game times for Tuesday. And we were wondering if they were going to wait for tomorrow's results to decide these. But that's really absurd. And that's really would have been ridiculous. So we now know that the first game on our four-game Tuesday to open the wild card series will be the Tigers and the Astros at 2:32 p.m. Eastern time.
Duh.
Fascinating. Followed by the Royals and Orioles, which we're about to talk about. And then the
at
whoever against the Brewers.
At 4:08.
4:08. Yes. Followed by the Brewers playing someone and the Padres playing someone to round out the game. All right. Let's talk about Royals and Orioles.
Okay.
Again, we were ready to talk about the Royals in Houston. But no, it will be Bobby Witt and the boys heading to Baltimore to face an Orioles team that I guess looked pretty good this weekend against the Twins team that very much had rolled over.
The narrative machine. What sound does it make? No one will know. But you're right. Bobby versus Gunnar Henderson. The two most exhilarating young shortstops in baseball, not named Ellie De La Cruz. I would put him in that category personally. Maybe not quite as productive, but certainly enthralling. No matter. BWJ against Gunnar and the Mustache. A 2014 ALCS rematch with none of the same characters, except, of course, for Salvador Perez. I was at 2014 ALCS Game 4 in Kansas City as a sophomore in college and watched my Baltimore Orioles get embarrassed and swept, and I'll never forget that. And there's a lot of pain coming back up with Royals Orioles, but I'm going to be okay. And then, of course, Bobby and Adley, the top two picks in the 2019 MLB draft. Did the Orioles make the wrong pick, taking Bobby over Adley? We will surely know once this series is over.
Yes. It is interesting. I was going to mention that because, again, it's not like Adley's had a bad season, but with both of them, I mean, bad by what we expected, sure. But let me finish my point because it's related to what you were about to say, which is
he's not had an exceptional season.
That's definitely true. And to that point, when you're the catcher, you know, you're still very important all the time. However, like, Gunnar is the first Oriole that we are now naming very comfortably in a way that even a year ago, it was kind of like, oh, even after Gunnar's awesome rookie season, it was still just like, oh, but Adley is the franchise. Whereas now it feels like Gunnar is that. Of course, there are other recognizable players on this Orioles team. But in the way that we just described, you have the Astros' infinite postseason experience against the Tigers that have zero. This time, it's not that these Orioles have mountains of postseason experience, but Kansas City has more than Detroit because they had brought in veterans that have been in the postseason before. And they have Salvador Perez, which is about as good as it gets in terms of a guy that's been in the postseason, even if it's been a long time.
And Tommy Pham and Robbie
Grossman. Tommy Pham. And most importantly, Will Smith, your guaranteed World Series winner.
Will Smith, who has won the World Series the last three seasons on three different teams. He is on the Royals. So, of course, they're going to win the whole thing. Let's just dive right into the offense, if you don't mind, because I want to ask you a question here. Besides Bobby Witt Jr., would you take a single Royals position player over a single Orioles position player?
Well, it's related to what we were just talking about, which is, I think you could make a case for Salvi over Adley right now. Now, defensively, it's actually interesting. One thing about the Royals that is just incredible, and I'm jumping a little bit ahead here, their control of the running game is ridiculous. They have allowed like 30 fewer stolen bases than the second fewest team that is allowed. So, and Salvi's part of that. Freddie Freeman's a part of that. But I think that Salvi,
wait, hold on,
you could argue
out.
Over Adley. Yeah.
I think their best pitcher being a lefty is a part of that.
Sure.
I think their second two best pitchers being veterans is also really important.
Totally. No, pitchers are a part of are a massive part of that. But it's such a huge gap that I noticed that. So that's something. Not that Baltimore is necessarily a team that's going to, you know, run all over you. So that might not really matter as much with them. But anyway, I think Salvi is one that you could make an argument for in this, especially considering the offensive season that Perez has had compared to the one that Adley has had. Other than that, no.
The Orioles offense is definitively better than the Royals offense, who have struggled mightily in the month of September. The only Kansas City Royal over a league average WRC plus in the month of September is Bobby Witt Jr. Everybody else has been below average. Many of those hitters have been very, very below average. And so I think you just have to take the Orioles lineup, particularly because the Orioles have their right handed hitting mashers back. We talked about this earlier in the week, but it's a big deal. Ramon Urias, Jordan Westberg, Ryan Mountcastle, all of whom swing it from the right side, all of whom start and hit well against left-handed pitching. That will be a big deal in game one of this series because they will be seeing a wrong-hander in that first game, as the Royals will send Cole Reagans up to the mound to go toe-to-toe with Corbin Burnes, the Orioles' big trade chip from the winter. Game two is almost certainly going to be Zach Eflin, who the Orioles got at the trade deadline from the Rays, going up against Seth Lugo. Lugo has been confirmed by the Royals. The Royals have also already announced their Game 3 starter, Michael Wacha. And he is probably going to go against Dean Kremer, who will throw Game 3 for the very injured Orioles. Who has the better starting pitching, Jordan?
I think you got to lean Kansas City here. I mean, Reagans and Lugo have barely slowed down. That's the thing about this Royals offensive collapse, is that the pitchers have generally continued to do their job, which has made some of those close losses so frustrating, because this pitching staff did not tail off. There were a few teams in the first half of the season who were like, wow, they're pitching so much better. Boston, right? The Nats, you know,
Pittsburgh.
And Kansas City, right? Kansas City was part of that too. And all those other teams just totally both regressed / collapse, whereas Kansas City basically did not get any worse. They just kept on chucking. And so I got to feel pretty good about them and have to give them the edge here.
I totally agree with you. I think it's pretty close in those first two games, yeah. Like closer than you think. Eflin's been really good for the Orioles since the trade, and Burnes is Burnes. However, Dean Kremer in game three does not instill a whole lot of confidence. Remember, he threw game three for the Orioles last year in the DS and got blasted by the Rangers. So that gives you some pause. All right, bullpen. Ooh, okay. All right. So I think you got to lean Kansas City here, which is bizarre. The Orioles have the third worst bullpen ERA in September in the league. Mm. Okay. A lot of their reliable guys are not throwing well right now, particularly Yennier Cano, who's been very shaky and is definitely dealing with an arm injury. So what that means is the Orioles' most reliable relievers right now are a pair of left-handers, Gregory Soto, who they did get at the deadline. He's been really good, but boy, can he just walk the farm in an instant.
Well, and he was horrible when he first got traded, right?
So awful, like,
he's as volatile as it gets. I love Greg Soto, but boy,
and then
it can get bad really fast.
Keegan Aiken, who has been masterful since returning from the injured list. So,
yeah.
And then Sir Anthony Dominguez is there, Danny Coulomb, CNL Perez, Jacob Webb. Again, this is a team who needed to do more for their bullpen at the deadline, and they did not do it. They released Craig Kimbrell last week and does not exactly give a whole lot of confidence. Meanwhile, on the Kansas City side, maybe my favorite reliever in baseball on this team, and that is Angel Serpa, the Zerp dog, Zerp diggity, yeah. The Zerp man, lefty throwing upper 90s, and we just don't think about it because it's 2024.
Yeah, he's nasty. Obviously, the biggest name here is Lucas Hersig, just because of you know what they paid to acquire him at the deadline, and just getting, obviously making a big move for a reliever there. Let's also remember that they paid a sizable price for Hunter Harvey, who is just a non-factor due to injuries. Other relievers who they brought in to reinforce this bullpen: Will Smith, we mentioned, injured. Chris Stratton, injured. James MacArthur, who had been a big part of their bullpen, he has been injured and not really a factor. So really what we're talking about is Hersig, Zerp dog, as you talk about him. Chris Bubich, who has been honestly pretty good, also as a lefty, as he's transitioned into a relief role. John Schreiber, who they acquired also before this season. So a lot of new names. Daniel Lynch, another lefty, has been kind of transitioning into a relief role as well. So Carlos Hernandez, he throws hard, but I'm not sure how much we're really trusting him. So yeah, it's an interesting group. And I think against another bullpen, we'd be like, yikes, but it's pretty close. This is kind of a coin flip for me because I still think that I'm still not feeling awesome about KC, but I agree. I lean slightly towards the Royals.
These teams played six times during the regular season. I'm not going to talk about any of them specifically because they were both in April. Both sets were in April. The Orioles took two out of three in the second series of the season, went to Kansas City 2 weeks later, took two out of three in Kansas City. So they technically have the season edge. But when you look back, like, it's not the same team. Like, these aren't really the same group of guys. And so I'm not sure you can deduce a whole lot. Cole Reagans, I think, had his worst start of the year at home against the Orioles in one of these games, but I don't really feel too strong about it. X Factor time. There's one name that we have not mentioned yet in this preview, and it is an important name. And that name is Vinny Pasquantino, the first baseman for these Kansas City Royals and a very good friend of the program. Vinny has not played in about a month.
Yep. August 29th is when he took a fastball to the hand, broken.
Not fastball. There was a collision at first base.
I apologize. Every other broken hand this year has been a hit by pitch. So forgive me on that. It was a very weird collision at first base in which, again, he got, I think it was Diaz. It was a very unfortunate sequence. And he broke his right hand. I think it was his right hand. The point is Vinny, but that is not usually an injury, a broken thumb, I believe. And that is not usually an injury that you come back from in less than a month or around a month. However, it sure seems like, and let's be very clear, we do not have any inside information on this, but everything, the way that they talk about the fact that he's taken live BP multiple times already, suggests that there is at least a very, very good chance that he will be playing even in some sort of compromised form in this wild card series, which brings up right thumb surgery. Yes. Which brings up the first question that you asked me, which is that, like, I don't know what I would have Vinny over Ryan Mountcastle. Maybe a healthy Vinny. Right. But we don't really know the form we're going to have him in. I assume he will, if he's going to play, he's going to play first, but maybe not. Right. Maybe that's also probably not going to happen. So that's another part of it that I'm not totally sure about. But either way, that is a huge deal that I'm sure we will find out about probably not until Tuesday, I would guess. But Tuesday morning, we will have the confirmation when they announce the roster, if he is indeed back. If not, it's just one fewer batter that we are particularly impressed by in this Kansas City lineup.
I'll peel the curtain back, Jordan. I texted Vinny the other night. I sent him a picture of himself shirtless drinking in the celebration and said, so happy for you, dude. And he responded and said, nothing yet. So there you go. There's your inside information.
Thank you. Thank you for giving that. That's good. It's called reporting, folks.
He could have responded and said, boy, does my hand hurt. But he didn't. He also didn't say, boy, do I feel great. So, you know, congrats on making the playoffs, Vinny. Thanks. My hand hurts.
All right. Baltimore boy, who's throwing out the first pitch for these O's on
Buck
Tuesday?
Get Buck Showalter out there. Get him out there. Get Buck out there. Come on. No. It'll be Governor Westmore, I think. We'll throw one of them, if I had to guess. And then David Rubenstein, the new owner, might he should throw one of them. Again, maybe this is too much owner love, but like, I think he's the right choice if you want to get the crowd fired up. John Angelos. Oh,
maybe win the playoff series first. Come back for the D's.
We're already here. John Angelos, dude. Get the old owner out here.
Interesting.
Could you imagine the place boos him into oblivion? Crowds fired up. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's great. Who you got?
So the winner of this series will go to the Bronx to take on the Yankees of New York. I'm picking the Orioles. I know that you have been doom and gloom about this team for a good part of this last 4 weeks. And I get it. But I think they're going to figure this out. I think they're going to score runs. Yes. I think they're going to score more runs than the other team.
That's important.
And I know I'm not super feeling awesome about Kansas City scoring runs. And while I know it's and ultimately that is the objective here, is to score more runs than the other team. And while it's possible that the Royals will be able to sort of slow Baltimore down, I still see the offensive upside is significantly greater for the O's. So I'm going to go with Baltimore here.
A great miracle happened today in the world of baseball for Baltimore Orioles fans. And that was the Orioles getting the Royals and not the Tigers.
Mm.
Because I think the Tigers were a horrible matchup for Baltimore. They beat them 6 times in the last 2.5 weeks and are on fuego. Could the Royals go into Camden Yards and beat them? For sure. They scored 4 runs and beat the Braves today in a game the Braves absolutely needed to have, right? However, I have watched a lot of Royals baseball this month, and their offense has been horrendous in large, large chunks. Unwatchably
been
bad.
The worst in baseball in September. No
the
way.
The worst offense in baseball.
The worst
in
baseball. Not the worst of the postseason teams. The worst.
The worst. So I'm going to pick against the team that had the worst offense in baseball over the previous month.
That is totally valid. As I have already said many times here. Who knows? September might be meaningless information, as it turned out to be in many ways last season. However, we are going to we are going to do our best to analyze with the information in front of us. And the information in front of us is telling us that the Royals might have trouble scoring runs. And so I'm with you.
All right. Pack it up. Send it out. Close it down. That's our podcast. Thank you for listening. Enjoy the ball. Let it in. Let the joy fester and bloom. This is the time of the year, unlike any other. The weather, colder. The dreams, warmer. The machines of narrative booting up all around our great nation. And I view upon it with nothing but utter excitement. Jordan Schusterman, tomorrow afternoon, I will be getting in my 2013 Toyota Prius, no free ads, and I will be going down to Baltimore, Maryland, to Camden Yards to prepare myself for some playoff baseball. Thank you to the world for letting me do this. Thank you to you for podcasting with me. Thank you to Andrew Hartz for producing this show. Thank you to you, the listener, for a lovely, delightful 2024 regular season. The fun has just begun.
We will be back as soon as possible after the conclusion of this weird doubleheader in Atlanta with our recap of whatever that turned out to be, as well as previewing the National League Wildcard Series. And then on that, we will talk about our plans for the rest of the week. But until then, thank you all for listening.